Welcome to another episode of the Deborah Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. Last month, we discussed advances in cardiac surgery and the innovations on the horizon that are transforming surgical intervention technology and techniques. This month, we discuss pulmonary hypertension, which is high blood pressure in the arteries that supply the lungs. While pulmonary hypertension can't always be cured, customized treatment regimens can help manage symptoms and slow disease progression. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay. We're talking about pulmonary hypertension this month, not to be confused with regular systemic high blood pressure that dogs so much of the population. PH is confined to the lungs, but can progress to right ventricle failure, which can wreak havoc on other organ systems. It can be tricky to diagnose since its symptoms show up in other diseases and usually make themselves known at a late stage. There are five main groups, but within those, a ton of subgroups, each with its own list of possible causes and treatments. Deborah cardiologist Dr. Waris Rojas Marte breaks it all down.
Pulmonary hypertension refers to the elevation of the pressures inside of the arteries that run through the lungs. And that is separate from what we call systemic hypertension, which is a regular high blood pressure that people know and referred to as high blood pressure. But this is localized to the arteries of the lungs. That's what pulmonary hypertension is.
So if you have systemic hypertension, would you be worried about pulmonary hypertension as well?
Not necessarily, although patients who have long-standing high blood pressure later in life, they could develop congestive heart failure. And congestive heart failure is one of the causes of pulmonary hypertension. So it's something that it's very important from the preventive standpoint to work on the high blood pressure, the regular high blood pressure, because later in life, that could lead to other issues that ultimately cause pulmonary hypertension as well.
There's all these different steps involved here, potentially. Okay, so explain what is going on in pulmonary hypertension that localizes it that way.
There are different types of pulmonary hypertension, but basically the issue entails elevation in the pressure inside of the lungs, and that makes it harder for the right side of the heart, the right ventricle, to pump blood into the lungs. The blood that's going through the lungs to get cleaned up and oxygenated, it's happening, but it's more difficult. So that causes symptoms of shortness of breath, fatigue, swelling. Those are the typical symptoms of pulmonary hypertension once it's at an advanced stage.
How does this get going? What are the causes, the risk factors for this kind of situation happening in the lungs?
We can start by classifying pulmonary hypertension. It's a very, say, heterogeneous term because there are five different groups of pulmonary hypertension, and each one of them has a different etiology and a different treatment and a different approach. So that's what makes it a little complicated. We classify pulmonary hypertension in five different groups using the World Health Organization classification into groups 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Group 2, I'll start with the most common one. Group 2 is related to heart disease. Congestive heart failure, basically, is the number one cause of pulmonary hypertension. Basically, up to 2/3 of patients who have pulmonary hypertension is because of left heart disease or congestive heart failure. And congestive heart failure is caused by a number of reasons, from blockages in the arteries of the heart, long-standing high blood pressure, medications that cause cardiomyopathy, viral infections, chemotherapy, genetic conditions, etc. So that leads to pulmonary hypertension. Then the second most common type of pulmonary hypertension, which is WHO group 3, it's a chronic lung disease. COPD, interstitial lung disease, those conditions, long-standing low oxygen that happens from chronic lung conditions, leads to development of pulmonary hypertension. And that is different than the one caused by congestive heart failure, and it's treated different as well. And then we have the least common types, but also very particular in terms of treatment. We have WHO group 4. It's chronic thromboembolic pulmonary hypertension. That's a mouthful, but it's patients who have pulmonary embolisms that doesn't resolve or chronic PE. In most cases, in 95 to 97% of patients who have a pulmonary embolism, the body takes care of the clots. And those patients don't go on to develop any issues. But in a small groups of them, 3, 5%, those patients remain with the clots, occlusions in the arteries of the lungs, and that leads to the development of pulmonary hypertension, which is group 4. And then group 1, going back, I left it last because it's the most complex of all. It's what we call pulmonary arterial hypertension. There's a distinction. Pulmonary hypertension refers to any of the five groups. Pulmonary arterial hypertension, or PAH, only refers to that one, to group 1. And there can be different types or subtypes of group 1 pulmonary hypertension. For example, there's and genetic mutations that can cause it. There are diseases related to connective tissue disease disorders like lupus, scleroderma, Sjogren's disease that cause or are related to pulmonary arterial hypertension. Conditions like liver disease, for example, high blood pressure in the liver can cause pulmonary hypertension or portopulmonary hypertension. HIV, certain medications like cancer treatments, amphetamines, can cause pulmonary arterial hypertension. Congenital heart diseases that don't cause group 2 pulmonary hypertension can lead to development of pulmonary arterial hypertension as well. Everything that is included in the group 1 or PAH are basically treated similarly. There are close to 15 drugs available that we use for this particular type. And then group 5, it refers to diseases that don't fit into the other groups. Patients who have chronic kidney disease, on dialysis, hematologic conditions like sickle cell disease, and any other condition that is not included in the other types is like in the miscellaneous group, and basically that is group 5.
So it's broken down into so many groups and subgroups, but how common is pulmonary hypertension? And it seems like when you talk about all these different ways it can arise, is there a lot of it going on?
Broadly speaking, it's 1% of the population has pulmonary hypertension, just in the general population. But if you consider a specific group of people, let's say people who have congestive heart failure, then it's very common to find the diagnosis. Over 50% of patients can easily have pulmonary hypertension. And then if you look at patients who have chronic lung disease, they also have a higher chance of having the problem related to their condition in the same way as patients who have, let's say, history of pulmonary embolism. They have a higher chance of having pulmonary hypertension related to that condition as compared to someone who never had any pulmonary embolism.
Now, congestive heart failure being so related to it, this would be more of a complication of late-stage congestive heart failure?
Not necessarily. Even patients who have not as advanced forms of heart failure can have some degree of pulmonary hypertension. But obviously, as the heart failure progresses, the pulmonary hypertension also gets worse. The pressures go higher and higher. There are numbers that define pulmonary hypertension, and someone who has heart failure at an early stage could have mild pulmonary hypertension, and that can, if left untreated, that can progress to a more severe stage of it, in effect, that cause more permanent damage to the right ventricle, which is the most feared consequence of pulmonary hypertension. The development of a right-sided heart failure, which is when the right side of the heart gets weak and doesn't pump the blood forward adequately.
So with all these different subgroups and all these different ways to treat whatever type of pulmonary hypertension is there, is the general process similar? It seems so complicated. Is it as complicated as it sounds to me?
Yes, it could be.
Okay.
Could be very complicated. We have diagnostic algorithm to identify the right type. But obviously, if you're not familiar with it, even for physicians, even cardiologists who are not dealing with this on a daily basis, can have issues making the right diagnosis because there are so many considerations, so many types and subgroups that we have to consider, and they can overlap as well. People who have, let's say, longstanding COPD because they're a smoker or had any exposure earlier in life and develop a group 3 pulmonary hypertension from the lung disease, they can also develop heart failure if they have at risk factors for it. Older age, hypertension, diabetes, and definitely there can be combinations of different types. Or someone who had a pulmonary embolism, but also they were a smoker and had pulmonary hypertension from the smoking, from the COPD, so they can overlap. So that makes it even more complicated to identify and treat it.
Now, when we talk about hypertension, overall high blood pressure, we always call it the silent killer. How about this one? What are the early signs and symptoms? Pulmonary hypertension has symptoms that you feel,
yes,
that you see, that you notice without having to use, you know, a cuff or something. So tell me about the early signs and symptoms that would raise a flag.
For pulmonary hypertension, shortness of breath, feeling tired, fatigue, the swelling of the legs, of the abdomen, those are already more advanced stage symptoms. But we do find sometimes patients that don't get diagnosed earlier, and when they present, they have this type of symptoms. Other more advanced symptoms as well are the syncope, or loss of consciousness from the pulmonary hypertension, hemoptysis, which is spitting up blood. That can be a late stage symptom or sign of pulmonary hypertension as well. But the early signs are tiredness, feeling fatigue, short of breath. Those are the main ones for patients who are not at an advanced stage.
And if your blood's not getting oxygenated properly, then you're not looking so good either. How bad can you look with it besides just like swelling in the ankles and such?
Not necessarily. It all depends. And it's amazing how much the body, the human body, can adapt. Let's say the oxygen saturation is normal. It's above 94-95%. In someone who doesn't have any lung disease. We are concerned in patients who have chronic lung disease whenever that number drops to below 88%. But these patients, their body gets so used to it and adapt over time that sometimes we see patients down in their 70s and they are not even noticing it. They might feel it, but they just feel that it's progression of the condition. And sometimes they say they're getting old because it develops progressively. If my saturation drops to, let's say, 85, to pick a random number, which is not that low, I would start struggling to breathe and feeling short of breath because it happens acutely. But when it happens over months, years, the body just gets used to it. That doesn't mean it's not damaging the body. The organs are getting damaged by not getting enough oxygen. It's like having high blood sugar for long periods of time that you will... Many times you will know of it when you have end organ damage. The same thing happens when you have low oxygen. If it's not picked up early, you might come to notice it when the patient develops already pulmonary hypertension and the problem is discovered.
So you rattled off a lot of causes, risk factors, et cetera. Who is most at risk for this?
Again, it depends. Anyone who has any history of lung disease is at risk of having pulmonary hypertension. Specifically, diseases like pulmonary fibrosis, interstitial lung disease, patients who had COVID during the COVID pandemic and were left with a significant shortness of breath, difficulty to ambulate, or they have low oxygen in their bodies. So that would be for group 3, patients who have a congestive heart failure, swelling of their feet, a shortness of breath on exertion, they are at risk for developing group 2 pulmonary hypertension. People who have connective tissue diseases, anyone who has lupus, scleroderma, those patients many times are sent for screening, especially patients with scleroderma who have the most severe types of pulmonary hypertension. They are screened routinely with echocardiograms just to make sure that they're not developing the disease and need the early treatment of it. So anyone who has connective tissue diseases could be at risk for developing group 1 pulmonary hypertension. And for group 4, anyone who has a history of blood clots, DVTs, pulmonary embolism, they are at risk of developing group 4 pulmonary hypertension.
The symptomology overlaps with so many other possibilities. So what tests, procedures do you use to rule it out, to confirm it? And it must be a long list.
Well, we always start with an echocardiogram. a sonogram of the heart. We can indirectly measure the pressure in the lungs with that. That's a good start. We can guide anything from there, along with the patient's background, history, symptoms. Just to give you an example, if someone presents with pulmonary hypertension in their 70s, they have a history of high blood pressure, diabetes, they had a stent put in. Statistically speaking, the chances that they have group 2 pulmonary hypertension from left heart disease is very high. That is the most common type. So when I do an echocardiogram, then I would be looking for the signs of congestive heart failure. If that is the case, if we see that the echo is consistent with that, then we would just treat the patient for congestive heart failure. And the expectation is that the pulmonary hypertension gets better with that. We don't necessarily go on to order more tests. If it's a more, less straightforward scenario, let's say someone has the same risk factors in their 70s, high blood pressure, diabetes, history of a stent, but they also have COPD, or they have a history of blood clots in their lungs 5 years ago. Then now the question is, okay, do they have heart failure related pulmonary hypertension and COPD related or pulmonary embolism related? Then we need to do more tests for that. For COPD or lung disease related, we might want to look at a CAT scan, a chest CT of the lungs, pulmonary function testing. In this particular group of patients, we collaborate with pulmonologists or lung specialists for the diagnostic tests that need to be done for this specific type. COPD, PFTs or pulmonary function tests, 6-minute walks, CTs, that's something that radiologists help us with. If it's group 4 from chronic thromboembolic pulmonary hypertension, then we use ventilation perfusion scans or VQ scans to look for chronic blood clots in the lungs. In anyone who has any type other than group 2, we need to do a confirmatory test. It's an invasive test. It's a cardiac catheterization or a right heart catheterization. It's a diagnostic procedure for pulmonary hypertension. That's how we measure the pressures directly and make an official diagnosis.
Didn't I warn you at the top that this is a complex condition? That's cardiologist Dr. Juarez Rojas Marte. And in our next segment, we get into the highly specific, customized treatments that are required to maybe reverse, at least slow down, and or manage PH at any stage. It drops the first Wednesday of the month. I'm Rasa Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Deborah Doctor interviews at DeborahHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at demanddeborah.org.